Well, what a week it's been. Anthony Ginsberg has been tracking the markets and its influence that the US election has had. We spoke to him last in LA, that's in California. Now we're catching up with him in London the day after the big election. He'll be giving us some insights into why we saw some of those shares going so strongly yesterday. Tesla, the banks, Palantir. Wow. Anthony, always good to be talking with you. And particularly now, you told us that if Trump were to win, the market would love it. My goodness, that was perhaps even an understatement.
Absolutely, Alec. We saw a record 1,500 points yesterday on the Dow Jones, and actually a historical record on the S&P 500. It's never risen over this amount on the day after Election Day. So the S&P was up about 2.5%, almost 3% actually. The small cap Russell was the big flyer. It went up almost 6%, Alec. But for the Dow to do 1,500 points, we haven't seen that kind of gain in over 2 years. So a big rally on Wall Street. I don't believe it's a relief rally. I believe it's actually going to have extended legs because there's this overhang. We talked about the fact that the Federal Trade Commission and the antitrust rules are a lot of bureaucratic red tape that the Biden-Harris team had basically overreached the last couple of years. And many felt they didn't have a mandate to clamp down on M&A activity and private equity in some of the ways that they've done so. So we actually see the tech industry in particular being one of the main beneficiaries out of going forward.
Well, Gins Global is focused on the tech industry. You've made it kind of your area for your ETFs. You did mention to us that there were a number of acquisitions that were put on hold because of the policies that the Biden-Harris administration had, which will now be released when Donald Trump comes in. Just maybe provide some more detail, if you could, on which acquisitions might go ahead now.
Well, just firstly, the White House has actually taken Apple and Google to the law courts. There's a lot of antitrust litigation against certain companies. Some of those lawsuits will probably be dismissed now. So that's one of the first things. They're trying to actually break up the Google search engine so-called monopoly, amongst other things. So most of those big firms, including Microsoft, have been blocked on a number of acquisitions. It took Microsoft about 3 years almost to get this Activision, that large gaming deal that they finally broke through. It was the largest tech deal in the last 2 to 3 years. So we actually see a lot of the mid-cap and smaller cap companies in the cybersecurity space, Alec, cloud computing guys as well, that have actually been on hold. What's actually happened is, like with ChatGPT and OpenAI, instead of acquiring the full company, they've bought licensing rights or they've actually done a royalty deal. Sometimes they've actually just brought staff on and tried to do it in-house instead of going the acquisition M&A route. So we expect a significant pickup in M&A activity across the board, but I would specifically look at AI, cloud, and cybersecurity for now.
So you have a fleet of exchange-traded funds across the tech sectors. What would be your favorite now in the new Trump Mark II trade?
Actually, we have a number of regular global equity index funds as well. We have about 20 different products, Alec. But on the tech-specific side, cloud, obviously, we saw last week or two that the big tech earnings from both Microsoft was up 33% in their cloud. Google had a 35% gain in their cloud. The Amazon was a bit of a laggard that you recall, did about 20% roughly. So we actually still see the cloud space, they call it the hyperscalers, being where the guys really want to acquire a lot more data capacity. This is where the algorithms and the AI is being outsourced. They are the big spenders, actually, of NVIDIA chips. And that's why we remain positive on the likes of NVIDIA. I wouldn't be surprised at all if you see some big tech mergers that cover both NVIDIA, the likes of Intel's being potentially discussed out here too. They've had problems, as you know, and there have been some acquisition talks about taking out Intel, in fact. But frankly, the big tech firms are all looking at acquisitions. So across the board, I'd say the minute the litigation is removed, this is the Federal Trade Commission head, Lina Khan, who's going to be shown the door in the next couple of weeks, and everybody will be breathing a sigh of relief in Silicon Valley. And that's partly why you saw Elon Musk and a number of Silicon Valley leaders actually switching alliances. Historically, Silicon Valley, Alec, has been more of a Democratic Party support base. But there's been a lot of frustration here, and there's been this overhang, frankly, of corporate activity, particularly the tech space, that's just been sitting on the sidelines. So to answer your question directly, we see Microsoft, Google, Meta all looking at making additional acquisitions, but specifically in the cloud and cybersecurity areas, potentially AI as well.
So the targets of those acquisitions would be the ones that would get the biggest uplift. But from what I'm reading between the lines, the Magnificent Seven are also going to be a good place to put your money now.
Yes, because they have had this burden released from them. There's been essentially this negative trade on all the litigation. Particularly, I would say it's been hampering Google and the likes of Apple and somewhat Microsoft as well. So that's part of why you've seen that this relief rally. There's a bigger picture also, Alec. We've talked the other day about robotics, and with Trump implementing trade wars, most likely with the Chinese and with the Mexican government as well, we see a lot more need for automation in U.S. factories across the car sector. Trump brags that he's forced the closure of the largest potential Mexican car manufacturing plant because of his victory. So we're going to see a lot more onshoring, and that means more robotics. So we actually have 8 different themes in our tech ETF, the one that's about 2 billion rand. It's up about 40-odd% over the last year, but specifically robotics, cloud, AI, social media, and cybersecurity. Those are sort of the 5 key sub-themes, along with gaming or digital entertainment, which has a link to AI as well.
I had a chat earlier today with the CEO of Sappi, and this is interesting because Sappi is building a plant in Maine, $400 million. It's called Somerset. It's not far from completion. Other South African companies who are heavily invested in the U.S. are, of course, Sasol, who are in Lake Charles in Louisiana, and Sibanye-Stillwater, which has the Stillwater operation, the palladium operation. So those three companies in particular would be paying a lot of attention to your answer to this question. Is this Trump victory going to be better for onshore American companies? In other words, companies, their subsidiaries based in the United States, are they going to get a lift from this? Sasol certainly needs it.
Well, they need to be able to avoid sizable tariff levies of anywhere between 20% up to 100% potentially, the way Trump's talking. I actually think it's a game changer for onshoring more manufacturing in the U.S. A lot of the car companies are very well positioned. The likes of Mercedes, BMW, other offshore manufacturers have already over the last decade or so realized the writing was on the wall for importing cars. So they've actually all already adopted a domestic manufacturing base. I would just say that I think South Africa needs to wake up, as we say, the state of the Wakkerskrik when I grew up there, because I'm worried that South Africa is not going to capture enough trade. I hope that the current ambassador in the U.S. that represents South Africa really will focus more on trade. Trump is less interested in discussing with South Africa about things like Palestine and Iran. He really is focused on, as you know, doing deals and trade. And the AGOA, I know it was renewed recently, but it's a totally different ballgame all of a sudden. We've moved from a more South African-friendly Democratic Party to, frankly, a less friendly Republican Party. And we need people representing South Africa in the U.S. that can actually speak about business and trade, because that's really what it is. It's very transactional, the Trump White House. They're going to talk about tariffs. They may even look at AGOA all over again. So it is a sea change, Alec, here.
And what about immigration? I ask this because a less known fact is that there are more than 20,000 South Africans who are working in the United States in agriculture. So farm boys who go from here, farmers' sons, farmers themselves, go off to the United States, work in the in Middle America, come home, get another visa, go over the next time round. Are they likely to find the going a little tougher? Are any South Africans wanting to move or work in America going to find it more difficult given the statements Trump has been making about immigration?
Well, there are two sides. On the legal immigration side, to get work permits and H-1 visas for skilled workers, I don't believe that's going to change very much. He's really focused on the border was a massive issue here, which also related to crime, and that's become a signature issue for him. But that's all about illegal immigration and deporting people who've overstayed their visas or who are just here illegally in the U.S. Actually, the coastal elites on the East and West Coast have been shocked by this election. Let's be frank. The main broadcast media, the likes of who we know, have been very negative towards Trump for years and years. And many folks in the Midwest who have been traveling recently on road shows, I'm here in London on a separate road show to explain to the folks in the UK how Trump got more than two votes. Because you talk to a lot of folks in England, they're here in London today, they think two people and a dog might vote for Trump, based on the BBC and other coverage, quite frankly. So there's been a real distortion in coverage. Trump is seen as a low-tax, business-friendly Republican leader. And I think many, many people in the Midwest and in central USA have felt compelled to say that they're not better off over the last 4 years. And they're worried about inflation. Their paychecks may have gone up slightly, but the grocery bills went up 2 to 3 fold more. And I think some South Africans can relate to that issue too. So they really wanted a change, and they didn't feel that Harris was really a clean or a new face. She basically said she's going to continue the Biden policy. So perhaps it's not such a surprise if one traveled to Georgia and to the Midwestern states like Michigan and Wisconsin. Trump really wants to bring back manufacturing, particularly automobile manufacturing, to the likes of Michigan and the Midwest. Signature campaign issue, and he destroyed the so-called blue wall, which is Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. All the pollsters pretty much got it wrong. Those folks are middle America. It's actually the revenge of the working class, Alec. Let's be honest. The working class Americans, not the coastal elites from Harvard and Berkeley. This was really a resounding, I would say, working class vote saying we're fed up and we want more business-friendly policies. And frankly, the Silicon Valley itself was also part of that coalition. It's the first time I've seen Silicon Valley really get behind a Republican candidate in over a decade.
You follow, being a fellow South African, Elon Musk, very closely, lives in California where you live. At the last election, he gave a lot of money to Joe Biden and was very supportive of him, and he switched completely away from Biden to Trump. What was behind that?
Well, Elon's going to most likely become the efficiency czar, we call it, in Washington, D.C. He wants to actually help Trump slice out of a $6 trillion U.S. federal annual budget. He wants to try and slice at least $1 to $2 trillion out of that. I believe there'll be more outsourcing, and Elon will benefit both SpaceX as well as his other companies, obviously Tesla as well. But he'll be able to get more outsourcing in AI, in cyber. NASA's doing more outsourcing with rocket boosters as well. So that's what's in it for Elon, that he'll get potentially more subsidies as well on EV cars. His Starlink's also being inflated by Trump as helping during the recent hurricanes. So I think that he'll be an important player going forward to try and reduce the size of government. I mean, Trump he talks about Reagan as his hero when he thinks about other Republicans. He doesn't talk about the Bushes, but he goes back to Reagan. He says cutting the size of government is one of his key features. So I think Elon saw that, and a lot of the Silicon Valley folks, frankly, have been fed up, not just with the Federal Trade Commission and the antitrust regulations, but just the aggressiveness. They were taking these guys to court. They've been massive amounts of litigation against the big tech firms in particular, but not just them. Some media companies have also had mergers blocked. So it's been somewhat anti-business, frankly, and this has been an overhang on the markets. Although, yes, we're up over 20% on the S&P this year, we expect with the tailwinds next year, as you know, we've got tomorrow, your time, there will be a Federal Reserve 25 basis point rate cut. There'll be another one in December, 25 basis points. And Trump is pushing to have another 3 to 4 Federal Reserve rate cuts next year. So we see a good tailwind for stocks going forward.
And this big bump that we've seen already after it became apparent that Trump would win, and then when it was confirmed, you said that this is unlikely to be a relief rally. Are you suggesting that this could be the beginning of a renewed bull market?
Yes, because the earnings actually that came out when you and I discussed it a week ago, they did actually beat most of the earning expectations, but there was this overhang that some of them have still got antitrust lawsuits. The other issue is the fourth quarter numbers are looking pretty solid, double-digit earnings growth as well. And then you add the tailwinds of lower interest rates next year and less red tape, less regulation, the freeing up of M&A. That's why the Russell 2000 is something key to watch. Those are the small cap, purely U.S. domestic stocks. That thing almost hit, it was 5.8% yesterday. That's a very important bellwether to look at because, frankly, they benefit the most from lower interest rates as well and less red tape, less compliance. They don't have armies of lawyers in smaller cap companies. So, yes, we believe 2025 will be a very good year for the equity market here.
And thereafter?
Well, yeah, there are too many profits out there that can look that far out, Alec. I have to say that the productivity issues that are being increased with AI and the adoption rates, I mean, we talked about the fact that over $50 billion was spent this year so far on AI data centers. This outsourcing to the cloud is improving GDP growth. It's actually improving productivity. So you saw we almost hit a 3% GDP growth for the third quarter. I wouldn't be surprised if you see 2025 again matching at least a 3% GDP growth rate. So that's very positive for an economy that's as developed as the U.S. to be growing at 3%. I know South Africans love a 3% handle on their GDP growth. So it all looks pretty positive right now, particularly if you've got someone who's going to cut down on bureaucracy and red tape. I think hopefully our fellow South Africans can learn a thing or two. I just hope that South Africa focuses on more trade with the White House. It's a different operation there now, and they really are focused on business and trade-friendly policies and less so about some of the old geopolitical issues. I think it's really important that South Africa focuses with their ambassador on trade missions and encouraging Americans to come and visit South Africa. I'm personally living in the U.S. We don't hear very much about trade missions or our ambassador, frankly, doing very much to promote trade between the two countries.
So there's lots on the agenda for South Africa. But talking about the BizNews tribe, there are always people who haven't come to the party. The BizNews portfolios have done terribly well. We are very similarly positioned to your tech portfolios, your tech stocks. And I know there are people who've been saying, have we now missed the run? If you were coming from a standing start, would you today be prepared to invest in U.S. tech, in the U.S. tech sector?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, just if you had come in 24 hours ago, you would be at almost 4% in our own tech ETF, for example. We don't believe it's too late to come in. One of the key reasons, Alec, is that this is a big boy game when it comes to AI. And if it really is a sea change, as we're increasingly seeing, it's going to be dominated by the Magnificent Seven for a good while yet. And we see more acquisitions occurring. So if you're in a broader tech space, we actually equally weight our tech holdings. We have 120 of them. We think there'll be major pickups of large cap and small cap holdings that have actually not risen as much. So yes, it's true the Magnificent Seven are relatively expensive with PEs north of 30 times. But if you look at our own ETF, the Megatrend ETF, the average PE is about 19 times if you do an equally weighted approach. So there are more conservative ways to invest in tech more broadly across up to 8 sub-themes the way we do. And we're not picking winners. And frankly, the small cap, mid cap, and some of the large caps have not really run since COVID to the extent of all the press going to the FANGs or the Magnificent Seven. So that's a very, very narrow trade. We're actually looking at a broadening out of the market. That's why we're positive on tech, not specifically just the Mag 7, but the broader trade, Alec.
Anthony Ginsberg from Gins Global talking to us from London today, where, as you heard, he's on a roadshow. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.